Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? It's your boy, James Lopez, representing for all the dope dads of the Fatherhood is Lit community. Dad life, better yet, parenting is difficult. There's no denying that. There are even times when an outsider has to step in to make sure your kids are good. And this week, I wanted to hear from someone who used to do that and still does. This week, we're going to find out what it's like to be a dad that's also a social worker. From my homie from the Social Work Rants podcast, Bass Moreno. What's good, Bass Boogie? How you doing, bro?
What's good, Fatherhood? How you been, man?
Oh, man, it's been a while since I've seen you, man.
Yeah, I know. It's been a long time before taking trips to the Bronx just to go to Staten Island.
Yeah, man, you left us. You know, with that being said, man, you know, before we begin this, man, I want to give you your flowers, bro. You know, I want to give you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, because you know, I know we're gonna cover your story a little bit more, but I want to congratulate you on all your success, man. Moving during COVID, that had to be crazy. Then you actually had, you know, you are the sole parent to your kids or the main parent, right? And you purchased a home during COVID, bro. That's not easy. That's not easy, bro. That's gangster. So salutes to you, man, for always wanting to grow and then making it happen. That's huge for your kids to see, bro, for real.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, try to teach them a little bit, just the home buying process and all that came with that, and it happened like so fast. So
during the roughest time of the year, bro. During the roughest time of our lifetime.
Yes, absolutely.
And you did that. You did that from coming from the Bronx, bro. Like from New York City, like, bro. You know that's a huge accomplishment, right?
Like, oh yeah, I know that, I try to like take some time out to like, damn, I really did this. So like, you got to celebrate your wins. Like we all about like the hustle and bustle, but you definitely gotta take the time out to celebrate your wins, and there's still more wins to come.
That's right. You know that before, you know, I wanted to jump right into it, but you know, you just brought up a good lesson for your kids, which is celebrate those small wins, but also get ready because there's more to come. You know what I mean? And that's something that we're not taught often. Like I'm not good at celebrating, bro, but I'm always looking forward to the next win. I'm not gonna lie. You know,
I feel you.
So yeah, man. So you know, the first time I met you in person, you came all the way from the Bronx to Staten Island for an event we were hosting. You know, that might not seem like much, but I can't tell you how many dads say they want to do something like that and then they don't show up. You know, they use time as an excuse, the weather, I mean everything they can think of not to put in that effort. You were different. You found an excuse to take the trip to do something you wanted to do. What made you hop on that ferry for the long trip, bro? What made you come out here? Because I know that commute was at least an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half, almost like 2 hours. Nana was following you for a while. I was like, oh, I saw this event and I always want to like try to do something for the kids. What can I do? And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, at the time, you know, the main parents, you know, single dad, and like, what can I do that's like not expensive for these kids and have them a good time and experience something different. And like, they never been to Staten Island before. Like, all right, the event came in, like, let's go. Like four trains all the way down to Bowling Green. And like, come on, let's go. The ferry coming in like 10 minutes. We can run, we can make it. And made the ferry. And I think the first time I went, took an Uber to the event. And then like the other events, we end up like taking the bus. So just to see what Staten Island is like.
That's pretty gangster, bro. That's pretty gangster because you know what it's like, man. You know you're in social work and you know excuses are crazy, right? And you made an excuse to make it out here. You say, yo, my kids are my excuse, bro. I'm in there. So that's dope, man.
I like to travel anyways. You know, in social work, there's a lot of traveling involved. So it was no thing for me.
Yo, that's dope, man. You know how we are, man. Like, you know, our thing here is to find things that are interesting for the dad too. You know what I mean? Like, you don't always got to just do it for the kids. So you found a perfect way to combine your loves and then your kids' love of traveling with dad. You know, now you're showing them the ferry. You know, you get to see the Statue of Liberty from up close. You get to deal with Wu-Tang Land. Come on, man. That's those experiences. That's the real child support, bro. For real.
the Forgotten Burrows stand out.
Yeah, man. You know, we get this, man. But it's all good, man. We got Wu-Tang. They'll hold us down forever.
Exactly.
So, yeah, man, you know, growing up in the hood, man, you know, especially in the projects, there was always two groups of strangers roaming around, bro. They were the church people knocking on doors trying to sell you the booklets. And then there was the social workers. We would always know the social workers because they came in suits or looked like us, but we could tell they weren't from around our way, right? Can you tell us a bit about what you did or do as a social worker, like from your eyes?
Yeah, well, I started in the field in 2002. So this is like months, January 2002. So this was months after 9/11. We still like dealing with that. And, you know, I went through a temp agency and they were like, we got this job for you. And you know, I was unemployed at the time, with, you know, a bachelor's degree in communications, you know, unemployed, and 9/11 happens. So they was like, we got this job for you. It was working with kids. Like, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. And so like, this was 2 days after Christmas. This is 2001. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll take it. So I started fresh off the new year, January 2002. Working in the foster care agency, you never guess how much I was making.
$7 an hour, bro. $7 an hour. We owed, bro.
Yeah, $8.25 an hour.
Whoa. So wait a minute. So first of all, you were not, when you graduated with your bachelor's, your first job wasn't to be a social worker. Like, you weren't thinking about becoming a social worker.
No, absolutely not.
So now they tell you, yo, you're gonna go help people, and here's $7 an hour or $8 an hour. How did that make you feel, bro? Like, coming out of college, like, did you feel that you were robbed, or did you say, yo, let me just take a opportunity to try something new?
No, I just took an opportunity. Like, I needed a job, you know, just basically home. Like, you know, my dad was still working at the time, so I was helping him out. I was doing a couple odd jobs here and there, but I just needed to get the house, have some money in my pocket. So I took it. And And then they bumped me up to like $8.50 an hour after like
balling.
A couple months.
Balling out of control.
And then after like six months, like I was like, I need to be on the payroll. So like I went through like this whole thing with HR, my supervisor, and then like switched to HR, so like the paperwork got mixed up. So eventually I got on the payroll. Now at the time it was good money for me, you know, no kids, just no girlfriend, nothing. So just, you know, paying a couple bills I had and just living at home. So I was good and, you know, did that for 3 years. And then I was working with, you know, severely mentally ill clients all throughout Queens. And, you know, that was kind of crazy. I had stories for days, you know, about that job. You know, it was good. You know, trying to integrate, you know, people who have been historically, you know, institutionalized, you know, in state hospitals and things of that nature. And having them, you know, bring them back into the community and helping them live with budgeting their money that they get every month, like their food stamps, and helping them buy clothes, and, you know, providing them other resources that they need just to live their life in the community like anybody else. So mm-hmm. did that for like 8 years, and I was working with HIV and AIDS diagnosed clients, you know, helping them find housing. You know, I was doing outpatient, you know, mental health, you know, therapy for a little bit. You know, went back to doing HIV, AIDS, you know, case management, and now I'm working in a school district, you know, one of the many school districts here in Delaware. Doing that, and even before that, I was working with the elderly in Harlem during the height of the pandemic.
Man, right, but before you moved, crazy. Right? Or during?
Right before. It was right before I moved.
Wow.
So all of like March, April, May, all the way until I left October 2020.
Jeez, so it's almost been 20, almost about to be 20 years of you doing work in the social
exactly
work world.
20 years. I just completed 20 years a month ago
in December. Man, that's crazy, bro. Like that, and it's crazy because that's not what you intended to do. And and it's crazy because I think it fits you perfectly, bro. Like, just knowing you, it's like the perfect job. You know what I mean? It's like a lifestyle. And I think that's pretty dope, man.
I mean, I'm like, I'm all about going to work, come back home, dealing with the kids. Like, even when I was younger, in my 20s, like, I was like, there's only like certain places I would go. I might go to a club once maybe like once a month. I was like always buying like bootleg CDs back in the day, going to 125th Street or go to, you know, Korea Way down to 34th and buying CDs and come back home. That's it.
Then that's it. So in the beginning, when you were doing foster care, right? Like, what did that look like? Like, did you have to go into the buildings to talk to parents, or were you talking more to like foster parents, or what?
A combination of both. Like, if like the what we call like the natural parents, use like social work terminology. Like, if they're around and trying to get their kids back, you know, from being in foster care, like, yeah, we help them to. You know, if they do what they need to do or what the family court mandates them to do, like, you know, work with them to get their kids back. Otherwise, we're pretty much dealing with the foster parents and working to possibly have those foster parents, you know, adopt the kids and try to get them out of foster care. So I have a couple of cases that parents will come in and do their thing for like 4 or 5, almost 6 months. Usually the 6 month is like the cutoff. If they can make the 6 months, and like, all right, we work with you to try to get your kids back. But there have been a couple of times they're about to hit the 6 month, and then they kind of disappear, or sometimes they have like relapse into drugs and alcohol, so, or some sort of DV, or they get arrested for something. So it was crazy. I mean, doing home visits and going family court was the most stressful part of the job.
Oh my goodness. And when you're going to family court, like, I'm pretty sure, you know, the majority of people believe that, you know, a lot of social workers come in and your job is to, yes, definitely make sure that the kid is good, but a byproduct of that is taking the kids away, when in reality your job is to, yes, make sure the kid is good once again, but you really want them to stay with the natural parents, right? Like, you really want to try to find a way to work that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just social work in general, us social workers in the profession in general are not to remove kids. Like, there's so much that goes into social work. And, you know, we got social workers in corporate America. We got, you know, people working in the state, local, you know, governments doing social work. We're in schools, we're in hospitals, like, pretty much in the local, like, medical clinics. We're all over the place. So it's not, our job is not to, you know, be like removing kids. I mean, if we might know of something, or like a child being, you know, abused or neglected, our responsibility is to, you know, report that. But we're not trying to like remove kids.
I know you're trying to help them work. You're trying to help them.
I know people who actually
better.
Like did the removals, and like, I don't know how they did that. Cause that could not be me,
bro. But but that's why I got you here, because I don't know how you do it. Because I would look at it and say, you know, a lot of us are fearful when it comes to, you know, the people that aren't educated on it are fearful of social workers, right? So were there times when you walked into that room with a parent that they just spazzed, that they said, "Yo, what the hell are you doing here? You're not my family. You not my boss. You can't do anything to help me." Like, how did a situation like that play out? Like, how did you not take that home?
For some reason, I've always been good about separating work and home life. There's been a couple of times that, especially in foster care, you know, I was like 21, 22 years old, you know, wet behind the ears, and I had clients who like double my age, like in their early 40s, and like, "You're a baby, just tell me what to do." Like, I had to like earn their trust and just being myself and just, you know, earning their trust. Like, "This is what I'm here, and I'm trying to help you out. Like, as long as you do what you got to do, like, I'm trying to help you get your kids back and doing whatever." I know there's one time I had this family who, there's a huge age difference with the husband and wife, and the first meeting that we had with them, like, the husband completely like spazzed on the wife, and they spoke in Spanish, and of course, me being like the only Spanish dude in there, and they're like, my supervisor's like, "What they saying?" And like, I'm trying to, they speaking too fast. Like, I'm trying to help you with the translation, but they're going back and forth. I'm trying to hear what they say so I can translate. So that was insane. And now I've had a couple of instances, you know, working with the mentally ill, seeing them in the hospital, and I've been, you know, threatened a couple of times, but like, "You come here again, like, I'm gonna punch you right in your face."
So what makes you come back then?
Like those clients, they're actually like there's also a mental health court that they're mandated. There's a law called Kendra's Law. There's a young lady who got pushed onto a train. This was years ago, so they named the law after her, called Kendra's Law. And basically, anybody who's mentally ill, I don't remember the ins and outs of the law. So basically, they like mandated to complete some sort of community program that they they learn basic skills in the community, do different groups like life skills and just different skills that they could be in the community and do what they need to do and budgeting skills and different things like that, just so they could live as normal as possible like anybody else. So I was doing that, so I didn't have a choice but to see him, and I had to see him every week, and I have to see you until the one time I was okay, this guy threatened me.
Yeah, but I think
I'm not going to see him anymore.
Yeah, but I think you still had a choice, right? Because you even going back to the fostering side, you were wet behind the ears, you were new to this stuff. You could have easily woke up one day and said, I ain't coming back, man.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm always, and I still am kind of still a kid at heart. I was Santa Claus the 3 years I was working in foster care. I was purposely volunteered to be Santa Claus.
You were loving it.
When we had Halloween parties, I always dressed up. Even though one year I was Freddy Krueger and taking pictures with newborn babies.
You were striking fear.
Scaring the kids.
Striking fear early. Yo, it's training, bro. It's training. That's all.
yeah. So just do different things like that, and just showing my personality and just being myself.
Yeah, it's crazy because I'm listening to some of the things you spoke about, and it's a lot of those things can easily translate to fatherhood, bro. The resilience, the perseverance, of waking up every morning and still going to do it, teaching your kids that, I'm helping people that necessarily might not be able to help themselves. And I know that, and it feels good to do so. You know what I mean? So what are some other lessons that you pulled from social working that you think you applied to your fathering, or that even make you a better father? Has there been a moment when you looked at somebody and you said, that's not the way I'm going to treat my kid?
I mean, like all dads, all parents know we make mistakes. At least for me, when I made the mistakes, and they kind of feel bad, right away, damn, I should have, said this or done this, and, feel bad, and, you go apologize to, kids are going to love you no matter what. So they might be mad at you, and they're still going to give you hugs and give you kisses and whatever. So, I don't know if there's anything purposely in my career I would, at least consciously, it would be I could put this in social work. I think now working in a school setting, now that there's some stuff that I'm trying to learn with the kids that I'm working with that I could actually bring back home and work with the kids, especially my younger one. I have a 13-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter. So just those type of skills that we use in school to bring back in the house. But even before that, my kids are very resilient. I try to not do things that my parents did with me. So that I think that's my main motivation to raise my kids how I want them, not how I was raised. My parents, my dad is he'll even to this day still hugs me and tries to give me kisses all day, every day.
He makes you say bendición
if he could. I was always spoiled with love with both my parents. So those skills I'll do that with my kids. But in terms of even stuff that I talk about on my podcast, getting a living will and getting life insurance and things of that nature, I want to set that up, like leaving a legacy for my kids, and that's something like my parents didn't. Well, my mom left me like a little life insurance. About I learned about life insurance, like my that insurance was trash.
You got to buy the high packages,
like,
man.
That legacy, so there was no legacy like for me. So like stuff like that, I want to like learn and leave a good legacy in case something happens like with me, like for them. So, once I pick up more chicks of the trade at the school job I'm at now, those type of skills I could bring back at home. And my fiance, she helps me out because she works as a teacher, or she did before we moved. So she has all those skills and she uses that with the kids, and I learn from her.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty dope, man. So now you know, like going back to the fostering side, right? Like a lot of times, you know, the kids are in foster systems because the parents aren't there, right? But also a parent can be there and not really be there. Does that make sense? Yeah. All right, cool.
No, absolutely.
So how do you make sure that when you're there, your kids know that they're getting the full bass? Like, is it going to trips like to Staten Island or finding new things? Like, what is it that makes you say, yo, I'm not only a present dad, I'm actually here. Like, I'm putting in work.
Right. I mean,
like, is there something?
No, I would take my kids to school. No, I try to work around my schedule to at least before we move to pick them up. If I could, definitely helping with homework and those fights with homework, especially from my daughter.
That thing is crazy.
If you don't get your stuff together, like, we're going to have a problem. And then my son, too, like, helping him out with his homework and, like, projects and just like you gotta figure this out on like, I can help you, but you gotta figure it out on your own. I'm not gonna do it for you. Like just get it together. And I think that's been like my issue now is that everything on all their work is on this damn iPad, and it's like how I know you did your work? What are you working on? Like what is going on? And like so that's how I get more involved now, because they're not bringing textbooks home, they're not using notebooks. Like everything is on the iPad. Like, what'd you do today? Like, what are you learning in math? Or, like, what do you need help with? Like, in terms of that, because, like, I'm not presently seeing it because, everything is with the technology in school. During this pandemic and, like, whenever we're ending this pandemic, like, who knows, that might be a continuation of this all the work being computerized and on iPad.
I think so, man. I think it's going to stay there. And and it's like you said, it makes you level up yourself. You know what I mean? Where it's like, if you truly care about your kids, maybe the first year you let them rock on the iPad without, too many questions. Then that second year you're asking, yo, what the hell did you learn today, man? Like, show me that work and let me see if I can get involved. Because like I got kids from all ages, right? Like I got my 10th grader, I got my 4th grader, and then I got my kindergartner. And yo, I can't help none of them with the homework, bro, because their homework is crazy. You know what I mean? Like the Common Core stuff, even my son with his Spanish as a Puerto Rican from the Bronx, man, I can't speak the proper Spanish, so I can't help him. But what I can do is ask him. Like, I got to ask him, yo, what did you learn today? And then make jokes about the words that he learned, and how they don't translate to my world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that you probably picked up throughout the 20 years of doing social work, too, where it's like, yo, just be present. You don't got to be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. That's something I learned. And, even when I went back to school to get my master's, it was like 2008, 2009, right after Eli was born. I was almost done, and try to be present while working a full-time job and doing a social work internship and then doing night duty and changing diapers and like try to help him read and then like falling asleep on the floor. while he's looking at me and like my wife at the time was like, well, wake up, you gotta read. And like, no, bro, I'm tired. Like, and I'm like doing all this stuff. Like, let me rock.
Yeah. I, thinking about you doing this for 20 years as somebody that's from the outside world looking in, I would have to say there was probably a lot of pressure on you, bro. Like, I think by you seeing, the worst and the best that the world has to offer, you know, how did you feel about the pressure of making sure your kids not only had a loving father, but a loving father that was going to help them grow? Like, was there a lot of pressure for you to not have your kids end up in the system? Like, was that something that you used to think about or not really?
Yes. I'm going to keep it a buck. There was a one time, like, I don't want to go too into detail,
no,
but there was a case against my ex-wife and stuff that she was doing. So that could have like really like jacked me up with my career. Luckily, like nothing was found on me. And then I ended up having like when I moved, like I was living in Jersey at the time. So when I moved back to the Bronx, and like I was able to have the kids live with me full time, and then like what's called like after like my separation from my ex-wife, so the kids were living with me, and, you know, full time. So like registered to school. Like I remember when like the judge gave me like the residential custody of them, that I like ran out of court. This was in Newark. Right there, like picked up my son in Bogota, New Jersey. Took like that half hour, 45-minute bus ride. Snatched them up. Went to get my daughter at my ex mother in law's house, and like ran to the Bronx and registered for kindergarten all the same day.
Wait, all in a couple hours. Well, it probably felt like minutes, yeah, but it was a few hours. Yeah, but that's a big thing though, because you know a lot of dads don't. You know what it is, man. We don't. A lot of us don't feel we could ever get custody. And not only did you get custody, you said, "Nah, man, I'm off to work."
Yeah,
like, so, I'm not even gonna sleep this.
Yeah, so that whole time, you know, was rough, and having like, you know, my son, like, he was only 5 at the time, so not understanding why he can't live with his other grandparents, and like, why are we in the Bronx? Like, I live in Jersey my whole life. Like, what's going on? And, you know, you can't really like really explain to a 5-year-old what exactly is going on. And, like, not right now. You can't like live with grandma and like setting up visitation with my ex-wife, and like doing all that, and then later getting like, you know, eventually full custody of the kids, only because she passed away in 2016. So I filed full custody before her passing, and then like she ended up like passing away. So that full custody paperwork, you know, I went to court, let the court know like, hey, like she passed away. In my court hearing, so like seeing like, no, it was like bittersweet having like that full custody, but only because of her passing. So like,
yeah.
So that's like going, like telling you like the kids, you know, being resilient of, you know, being so young, having their mom passing away. Like, no, my son actually know. I gave him like the cliff notes of what exactly like let her pass in my life, my daughter, like that time I'd be coming to give her like the cliff notes of what happened. And, you know, she's always asking, you know, questions every once in a blue about her mom, and like I miss mom, I miss mommy. Like, yeah, I know, and just give her like a big hug. Like what can you do? Just let her like express like however like she feels. So.
So now I'm gonna get my friend on real quick, man. I'm gonna get my friend on real quick, and I just want to ask as a friend, right? And you don't really have to answer either. What makes you give them the cliff notes and not the full version? And you, once again, you don't have to answer, bro.
Just, you know, their age.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. Like I said, he was only 3 at the time when he passed. Like, he was 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think I waited until he was like around 10 to kind of like give him the cliff notes. Like, he's always been like very mature, more for his age.
Mm-hmm.
So like, he's able to. So I'll give you the story. Like, the day she passed, I was actually at work. It was during the summer of July 2016. And my job was good. I was able like to take the kids to work, like if I needed to, whatever. So, obviously the summertime, the kids are off. So I took my son, my daughter stayed with my parents. And then like, actually that Monday, it was a Wednesday when she passed. So that Monday I get a call from her brother. He's bawling on the floor. Like I already knew like her time was coming. She knew her time was coming. It was just a matter of when she was going to pass. So that Monday comes, her brother calling me, like he's bawling, crying. So I'm thinking, okay, she passed away. They know she's in the hospital. They gave her like 24, 48 hours to live. I'm like, oh, snap. And so, like, I go see her Tuesday. She's in the hospital in Jersey. I go see her after work. She's obviously not in good shape. She's basically almost like on her deathbed. Luckily, like a couple years before that, I actually took out a life insurance policy on her. Best decision I ever made. So any dad, a life lesson, get life insurance on your kids, get life insurance on your wife, get life insurance on yourself.
On everybody,
you need that. Everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
The whole family tree, your parents, grandparents, everybody. If they don't have it, you need it. So, so here I'm in the hospital room in the ICU, and like her parent, like her mom's like praying over her, like, and like her dad is there, and it's like seeing her, like, oh snap, like this is basically it. So, I know in my head, like she, like I'm a realist, like I'm like she's not gonna pull through. It's just a matter of days. So I whispered in her dad's ear, like, by the way, like, in case she doesn't pull through, like, I do have a life insurance policy. So in case if something happens, like, you know, we could do the whole, like, funeral arrangements, have like the life insurance pay for it.
Yeah. You have the coverage.
Yeah. So like, so Wednesday comes, like, so literally 24 hours later after seeing her, like, in terrible shape, took my son to work. Like, I didn't let... So when I went home, he's like, how's mom? I was like, not good, babe. Like, and I just kind of left it like that. So, like, when I was doing the visitation and stuff like that, like, she had, like, history of seizures and all this other stuff that was happening. So when the day, like, she passed away, like, I was at work, I get this call, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, from her dad calls me, and like, no, she passed away. So, like, so I have all this anxiety, how my son is going to react. He's always been the mama's boy. Ever since he was born, it was always, like, mama, mama, mama. So, like, I have all this anxiety built up, like, okay, well, how I'm gonna tell this kid how he's gonna react? So I'm thinking like worst case scenario. Yeah. So I'm at work. I finally get the call, and like, Eli, let's go to the bathroom real quick. So we go to the bathroom, and like I sit on the toilet. It's like I look at him face to face. And I tell him, and it's like, kind of like, he just took it in, like, no tears, like, nothing. It's like, it's almost like I kind of took it as like, he kind of knew she wasn't in good shape, that something bad might happen. It's almost like, it was like a sense of relief that she's no longer like,
suffering,
need to suffer anymore. Yeah. So I start back up the anxiety. It was like, I'm gonna tell a 4-year-old that her mom passed. Like, Google don't even have an answer. I Googled it. Google had no answers. What do I do? How do I, like, tell this cute little 4-year-old, like, mom's gone? Like, so I'm like, social media. I love social media. So, like, literally, I'm on all these different apps, reaching out to people, like, from Instagram to Snapchat, like, hey, like, reach out to me. I think you will want to know this news. So I'm like, literally, I stopped work real quick and just, like, reaching out to people. And I'm still making phone calls, calling clients on top of that. Like, it was almost like the end of the day, and I still had a couple calls to make, checking up on people, how they doing while still, like, in the middle of messaging.
While still dealing with it.
On my phone.
Yeah.
Oof. And like my coworker, he saw my face and he was like, "You all right?" And like I shook my head, no. And he's like, "What happened?" It's like I kind of like nod my head, like, and like I like mouth, like I whisper, like his mom just passed. He was like, "What?" And he was like, "Oh snap!" Like so, dealing with that, calling home, I called like my ex girl that I was doing at the time, like has like a friend like reaching out because you know, the three of us had like a little history, and like reaching out and letting my parents know, and it was like, and then dealing with that like the next day, like I was still working, like I let my supervisor know, like, "Hey, I'm still gonna work these next 2 days, and then I'm gonna use like bereavement day like next week." And just like that whole week off. So like, all right. So there was a company event that Friday that I was looking forward to. I heard so many good things about it. It was like my first big event. That Friday I woke up and I was in shambles, bro. Like I was like in the bathroom, like on the toilet and just like bawling.
Like it finally hit you. Like yeah. all the days of like keeping your mind busy or distracted were over. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So I gotta go to all of the downtown Brooklyn for this like this event that I've been like looking forward to. That's like completely like on the wayside. Like I'm there physically, but mentally like obviously I wasn't there. And then like they have like hors d'oeuvres, it was nice. Like they even had like, you know, free wine and free beer and all the other stuff and like food, like finger food and all this stuff. Like, so it was cool. But that finger food, so my ex-wife used to make pigs in a blanket. Mm. And I go to the event, how I see pigs in a blanket. I like ran to the bathroom and like just that little thing of seeing pigs in a blanket in the bathroom, like,
do you
bawling again?
Yeah, it messed you up.
Yeah, so I was not good that day at all, and like we already had set up the funeral for that Sunday, and so that whole week was a hot mess. Mm. And I purposely didn't take the kids there. I just didn't want them like to see their mom like that, and like. Even though, like, it would have been a good life lesson, like, hey, like, this is what a funeral is. This is what we do when somebody's passing. But, like, I just didn't think, like, they would, like, handle that. I think they might have, like, traumatized them. And, like, I didn't want to, like, do all that. So.
Nah, bro. I can't judge you. And I don't think anybody else could judge you for that. Because you know your kids. And what you just told us was, listen, we were divorced already, right? And this still happened. And even after a couple of days, I was, you know, I was okay. I knew it was going to happen, but it still hurt me and it made me ball out of control. Right. So now I don't want to even risk the chance of traumatizing my child like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So nobody could judge you for that because you're the one. Once again, I tell people all the time, like the decisions that you make, it's for your kids to deal with them and for you to deal with them in the future, not for nobody else.
Yeah, exactly.
So there can't be no judgment there. If you felt that, hey, you know what, they're not ready for this, they weren't ready for that because it might traumatize them, it might make them feel the way I feel, or it might make them feel in a way that I don't even know how they're going to feel, I'd rather just keep it smooth and we're just going to move along. You know what I mean? And I can't judge you for that, bro. Like, that's, you made what the decision that you thought was right for your family, and it probably worked out well, man. You know what I mean? Like, it probably worked out well. I'm sure one day you're going to sit with them and you're going to, you know, y'all all going to ball out, right? Because you're going to tell them the truth and you're going to sit there and then, you know, but it'll be later, man. You don't got to do that now. You know, they got to enjoy childhood season, bro.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we got a pandemic. We still got to get
through. Yeah, and dogs, we come from the Bronx, man. Like, we our childhood season ends at like 10, bro. You know what I mean? We got to grow up really, really quick and do a lot of craziness sometimes just to survive. So we off that, man. Let's go to the fun stuff, bro. Your son came up with the theme song to your podcast, bro. Ooh, what the hell? How the hell did that happen, bro? Yo, how did that make you feel, bro? That's dope as hell.
Yeah, he's still asking me for money for that. I'm in the process.
Oh, he wants royalties. He wants royalties, bro. He wants percentage points, bro. Yeah. Tell him to text me, bro. I'll connect him with my friends at Dead Life Studio, and they could work the numbers out.
So I found an online summer camp. I found it through Instagram, just scrolling and like, oh, this looks cool. Like, I needed something for them to do all day, and that came. You know, they were teaching them about like, you know, DJ stuff and like podcasting and cooking, and, you know, different things like that, and some financial literacy. So I found that, and like he picked up like the music like real quick and just messing around with I think it was like Sorrento or whatever type of app he was working on, and it came up like, I like that, like I'm going to use that. So that's how I came. That's how the theme song came about for the podcast.
And he left you a legacy, bro. Because now, yeah, you got the exactly. Theme song for life, man. You know, it's crazy because we used to, you know, before you came out here to do the painting events that we used to do, the beat making events, right?
And I wanted to go to one of those.
Yeah, and it was really cool just to like see a kid that had no experience ever jump on a laptop that they know how to use, because, you know, kids know how to use iPads and all that. And then an hour later, they got a functional beat, bro. Like, it was like, damn, these kids are smart, bro. Like, they really soak it in. They really soak it in and go forward, bro. Like, that's a real proud dad moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, he did that. I used that and just try to come up with different things. And I'm always, like, looking, you know, online or in magazines, try to figure out what the heck to do with them and keep their mind, instead of playing a video game or being on the iPad, BSing all day.
Yeah, fighting for Robux. That's all they want to do.
Roblox is, Roblox is like one of the kings of this pandemic. Like, this came out of nowhere and like, it's been insane.
They taking all our money, man. That's my middle child. I got him in basketball now because, you know, he always playing Roblox and doing Roblox and doing video games. And now that they're opening up a little bit, I threw him into basketball. He hates it, bro. Like, hates it. Hates it. You know, I still force him to go. Yesterday, we're chilling in the living room, and he goes, Dad, I want to use my money for some Roblox. So I go, all right, cool. You stand over there, and you're going to have 5 shots. If you make one of them, I'll give you $5 for Robux. You know he missed them, right? He started bawling out of control. Then my little one, the snack man, he came through, and he goes, Dad, I want $2 for Robux. I tell him, all right, cool. Take one step forward, and if you make the shot, I'll give you $2, thinking, yo, you know, he's not going to make the shot. Yo, first try, bro. First try. My wife and I was just dying over there because my middle one just broke down, bro. It was like when you snatch an iPad away from a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
That was him, bro. He started bawling out. Oh, my God, why you did this to me? And it's like, that's why I put you in basketball. But you can get off these damn video games, man. stop being so connected to them. You know what I mean? It's like their lifeblood.
It's really, really ridiculous. And they go from one electronic thing to another. Like, my son go from like the iPad. He wants to use a laptop. Then he goes to play on the PS4. Like, bro, you got to just go open up a book. Go do something with yourself.
Yeah, give me an hour of that, yo. Insane. Give me an hour. That's what I tell my oldest. Like, give me an hour of studying, bro. Like, we let him, my oldest, we let him just rock. You know, he's a great straight A student. So we let him just do his thing. But still, we got to pull back a little bit and be like, nah, man, you know, take an hour, turn the video game off, and just study. Make believe you're studying. Like, just do that for me. And then you could go about your day. You know what I mean? And I use that more for, like, that the little ones know to take a break. Because, you know, they want to be like their big brother. So, yeah, man, so, you know, I always like to find things that are for my kids, but something that makes it fun for me, right? So what's something that you do with your kids that might look simple to others or might not be like a big deal to others, but reminds you that fatherhood is lit? Like, what's your traditions? Like, what is something that y'all do together?
Sometimes go for ice cream. I'm big on sports. So we try to go like a baseball game. Like, when we moved down to Delaware, they got a minor league team down here. So like, we already went to like a few games, and they got a mascot, and we let them mess around with the mascot. So we go out, like, you know, we have some fun doing that. Like,
I like torturing my little one. So like taking her to basketball games, even though she can't stand basketball. Like, take my phone, go play on my phone. Like, let me enjoy this game. Let me be. Well, you gotta go to the bathroom while you hungry. Let me know, but otherwise, like relax.
She ever took your Laker inspired painting that you did and break it, bro? Like, yo, forget the Lakers, man. Get them out of here.
No, absolutely not.
Then you gonna hurt her. That's it. Nah, that's it. You're not playing Wi-Fi for a month. I mean, you're not playing internet stuff for a month. That's with my Lakers stuff. Yeah, man. Because, you know, sometimes I think that a lot of parents, like you mentioned baseball, right? And the first thing I was going to say when you said baseball was, nah, that's big. But what you did was you said, we go to the minor league experience. And the minor league experience is pretty dope, man. Like, I know there's probably some dads out there that have done it and some that haven't. But the minor league experience, you could do basically whatever you want. Like, they, you know, after the game, they'll let you run the bases sometimes. You know, it's affordable. Yeah, yeah. The mascot is always playing with people. It's not even, like, the parents go to watch the game, but the experience is much more than that. You know what I mean? Like, the kids could be busy the whole time.
Yeah, I know a lot of New Yorkers are Yankee fans, but I got to give the Mets props. There's one time, like, their family, Sunday fun days are definitely, like, parent. Us dads really need to go check it out. They got, like, a little baseball field out there in center field for the kids, like, T-ball, and they got, like, a small batting cage, and they got MLB The Show, they play with PS4, PS5, and play a couple of innings on the video game. So there's stuff for the kiddos to do. And then on Sundays, I don't know if they're going to do it this year, but in the past, they left after the game, they let the kids run the bases and give Mr. Met a high five. So I've done that. I purposely go to the game on Sundays just for that. Like, you don't run the bases, and
you running the bases?
I need you guys.
You running the bases too, Baz? Don't lie, bro. Don't lie. You running the bases too, man.
The first couple of times, because Sophia was so young and she's a runner, I always got to be, like, on top of her. Like she's too young. I need to be with her. So they let me go. I did run the bases and get Mr. Met a high five. So I had to get my exercise somehow.
Oh, but you messed up, bro. You didn't try to show off. You didn't try to slide to home base, bro. You know,
scrape your
knee up a little bit. You know what I mean? Remind the kids that we ain't perfect. Yo, Baz, man, this was fantastic, bro. You know, I really wanted to find out, you know, how a social working dad thinks, right? And you gave me much more, bro. Like, in all honesty, like, I think we could sit here for hours just talking about our impact as fathers from the social working side. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I truly appreciate you, man. You know, I truly appreciate everything that you do for other social workers and for the parents out there, man. You know, thank you for being out there taking care of some of the kids sometimes, you know, earlier on in your career. And then also taking care of people that, you know, sometimes don't have anybody to take care of them, you know, especially when it comes to the mental side of things. You know, these things, once again, you know, they don't pay you in a lucrative way. They're not going to give you millions of dollars, but they fill your heart, bro. And I think that's something that we got to teach our kids. Like, it ain't always about the money. We can make our money, but what's going to fill up our hearts? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely, like, regarding parenting and social work, I'm not trying to do anything to my kids or be in a situation that to have a case call against me. So I'm not trying to bug out. Even my kid might do, like, the most dumbest thing ever. Like, I'm not going to put myself in a situation, like, to get a case called against me. Like, just, like, do what you need to do, relax, and let's not do anything crazy.
And I got your back. That's it. Well, Baz, man, you know, tell people how they can reach you, bro. Let them know where they can find those gems, bro.
Yes, so, you know, my podcast, the Social Work Ranch podcast, can be listened to every premieres every Friday morning, 9 a.m. You can follow the podcast on the Social Work Ranch podcast on IG, on one word. I also started a small business for social workers, holistic online self-care business called Bass City Entertainment, LLC. So you can follow me on Instagram at that handle, Bass City Entertainment, LLC. I have a a poetry book that's coming out, trying to paint how to maximize your full potential during downtimes. Hopefully coming out in March. So be on the lookout for that. So you can follow me on those two handles for more information on the book and the book release.
No, oh, I love it, man. I love it. I can't wait to support, man. Once that book comes out, you know I got you, man. But please, please, bro, when I order that book, please sign it for me, man. Because I got friends that write books, and they're like, yo, James, I'm going to sign it. And then they just send me like 20 copies with no signature, bro. I don't want that. I want to support my people. You know what I mean?
Nah, I got you.
You know what I mean? And the best way to support me back is by signing that sucker, bro. Hook it up.
Yeah, I'm going to sign a bull suck.
Nah. Relax, bro. Relax. We just had a great discussion. You going to mess it up with that, bro? Stop playing with my bulls like that. Yo, Baz, man. Thank you once again, bro, for your time. And thank you for everything you do for this world, bro. Good people like you. Yo, I know y'all out there. But when we find you, bro, like, we got to hold on to you and we got to appreciate you, man. So thank you. Thank you for everything that you do, bro. And thank you for always keeping it real with me, man. You know, you've always kept it real, man. I got nothing more to say but that. And I truly appreciate that, man.
Thank you, brother.
And to the dads out there, remember, man, those words mean nothing. It's all about the action. Our kids need us more than ever. My homie Baz came through and showed us how outsiders could help you, how insiders could help you. The main point is being there and getting your work done, man. Execution over everything. To the community, continue to make your presence felt. Fatherhood is lit.